Great. I know that you guys just turned and did a thing, and maybe there's some people who love that, and there's some people who don't love that, and I don't know. We can do a survey sometime, but still waiting for you guys to fill out the survey that we sent out already. So I'm just kidding. But I did forget to mention that earlier. Next Sunday is the deadline. Please fill it out. Incredibly helpful. If not, you're not allowed to come on the retreat. So we have made it. Anyways, my point was, I am going to ask you guys to turn together again and do that thing where we're going to talk about the text. But I'll quickly say, in the time I've been here, we have now officially made it through a chapter of the Bible. So that's pretty good, right? I'm pretty impressed. And in fact, one of the passages you guys got to, I think maybe I did such a bad job preaching about it that Josh had a guest come in the next week and preach about the same text. So a little bit of a admin error there. But Matthew 6, 1-4, if you have a Bible or if you want to look at the screens or whatever, he invites you to, I'm going to read it. And then I'm going to give you a few minutes, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, to turn and chat with your neighbors about. You could talk about anything, but I'll give you maybe a specific question to ponder this time if you'd like. This is what Jesus says in Matthew 6, starting in verse 1. He says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received the reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." I'm going to invite you to turn and chat with a neighbor or two or four, however you can do whatever size group you want. And you can chat about what you think this means or what sticks out to you. But I might be curious, if you wanted to, you could chat about this question. I'm guessing that you in your life have never seen someone give to the needy and then announce it with trumpets, probably. Or to stand on like the streets or in the synagogues and be like, "I just gave to the needy." I'm assuming that hasn't been our experience or that you haven't done that. Probably just because most of us don't even know how to play the trumpet. So very specific scenario. I would be curious if you might mull this over with your neighbors. What's like the equivalent in 2024? Like, we don't announce the trumpets, but do we? Like, what do we do? Is there an equivalent that we do nowadays? You don't have to answer that. You can talk about something else, about the text. But invite you now, just for a few minutes, turn to your neighbors, and at some point I'll start talking, and that'll kind of be the cutoff. And I will do the thing. You guys probably see this coming. I'm going to ask a couple of people to share what came up in their groups and stuff like that. So make sure you're listening to the really smart thing someone else says so that you can say it to the group. Okay, anyways, go ahead. Turn, chat, Matthew 6, 1-4. finish up that last powerful thought. All right, all right, all right. Thanks for doing that. Maybe you like this time when I sometimes get to talk about the Bible. Maybe it's not your favorite. I just deeply feel like the church needs to talk about the Bible with each other more. I'd love to hear some stuff that popped up in your groups. Maybe a couple people, I don't say maybe, I'm going to wait, but who would love to share first about something that popped up in your group? Oh, are you pointing at Claire? Yeah, that's fine. You know, usually when someone volunteers someone else, I usually pick that person. But in this scenario, I'm going to pick Claire. So,
I couldn't even see the fingers. We talked about what it would look like to just kind of boast about our giving and like tell other people, or Jehovah's Witnesses were mentioned, like standing on the corner and being visible in that way. But then we were also wondering about how, whether you budget your giving so that you can be financially responsible and like live in a city like Vancouver, but then how does that go with, you know, like don't let your right hand know what your left hand did kind of thing. If you're budgeting, like everything knows, right? So.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. Who would love to go next? Oh, David.
We have a friend on Facebook, and every time she does something good, it's on Facebook.
When you mention something good, what can you do? Deeds or money?
Mostly deeds. Mostly deeds, helping a church or whatever. Mm. But when I first joined this church, I remember... when they first elected me as an elder, and the other two elders are much older, and one of the elders, he's dead set against, like he was teaching me, when you do something good, just, you know, do it on your own, but never let the left hand tell the right hand what the left hand is doing. So I always remember that. So I don't know that's from the old pilgrim, like, you know, from 40 years ago or 30 years ago.
How did that feel to you at that point? Were you like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense? Do you feel it was a little heavy-handed?
Yeah. I thought it was heavy-handed at the time because he was very, very adamant about keeping it a secret. And it's actually, you know what people are doing nowadays, you know, on Facebook, on IG, and everything else, it's quite different. So we're in a different world. I don't know if that's, the same context that we're talking about nowadays. You know, if you reference, like, you know, what you know, it's saying here in Matthew. So
that's great. Thanks for sharing that. Jessica, yeah.
I think it's all about the heart because, like, in Matthew 5, we already read how it says, "Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So it's kind of like about your heart and how you're glorifying God with these things or yourself.
Yeah, you stole some of my sermon content. Thanks. It's tough. Jesus is kind of saying a different thing here, right? That's great. One more person. Who else would love to share? Who wants to be our headlining act? You guys come up with something awesome? Called you right out? No? It's okay. Yeah. It's up to you guys. I'm not going to force it to you. But yeah, one more person. Who would love to share something that popped up in their discussion time? Samson, my dude. Next time, guys.
Yeah, okay. We, like one of us here mentioned, if donating something, say, to children's hospital, usually when you do that, they ask you to if they can put your name on the wall, so all the donors' name is there. So we were discussing about that, and to me, like, I don't think it is really necessary because the God who is unseen, like, knows our heart. And we don't put our name there because we need or expect appreciation from people. Like, if we are, like, true Christian, this is my view. So, because even when we pray, he says that we have to go in our room, close the door, pray to God. So, in a way that he knows what we are doing. So there's no need for any giver, you know, to show off or, as you said, like, to play the trumpet. So,
yeah
that's what we discussed.
Don't bring your trumpets to Pilgrim on a Sunday. So just like a quick recap, this sermon, I mean, we don't know if Jesus spoke it in this order or all at once order, but this is how Matthew recorded it, and I'm really grateful for how it works and flows. So Jesus starts off with these things we often call the Beatitudes, these blessed attitudes, where he says, this is kind of like what people in my kingdom are like. You know, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the merciful, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are the pure in heart. And even in there, he really sets up this theme of righteousness, which in 2024 isn't like the coolest church word because we're kind of like, you know, be legalistic and stuff like that. So he bounced the other way. But Jesus really is calling us to live in his rightness, his holiness, his goodness, to reflect his character. You know, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the pure in heart. Bless you when you're persecuted. Why? Because of righteousness. Then he moves into the salt and light thing. So he's like, this is who the kingdom is like, and this is how they might show it to the world. Let your good deeds, righteousness, shine before others so that they can see your Father in heaven. Like, yeah, like Jessica said, there's kind of this tension. Imagine you're at this sermon and Jesus is like, let your light shine. Let people see your good deeds. It's going to change them. And then like 2 minutes later, he's like, but by the way, do all your good deeds like really privately. You're like, Jesus, like what the heck is going on here, you know? But after this kind of description of who the kingdom is for, Jesus does this whole section on like righteousness. And what he does is he uses the law, which is really the Old Testament law, which is a display of his righteous, holy, perfect character. He basically takes his character and mirrors it to how it should impact our lives and produce righteousness and holiness. So all of that to say, he describes this righteous people that are walking in his way, showing the world how to walk in his way, and what it means to embody his character and walk in his way, how to live a righteous life. And then he says, be careful about practicing righteousness to be seen by others, to get credit from others. And we're kind of like, I love the way this is organized because Matthew now has these kind of three sections where Jesus is going to talk about giving, like today. He's going to talk about prayer. He's going to be talking about fasting. And he's going to be talking about doing these in a way where your motives, your intentions, like Jessica had mentioned, are aligned with his righteousness, where it's about his right way of living. When I first started like kind of diving into these passages, like when I first heard these growing up in church, you know, you kind of think about it, you're like, oh yeah, and your right hand, your left hand, whatever. But as I've thought about it more, as I've gotten older, I'm like, man, like how messed up of a person am I? Like it's not just like Jesus is like, hey, be careful not to sin when you're like around really bad people or in a really bad situation. He's like, so while you're praying, you're such a conflicted being that you might be sinning. While you're giving generously, Jesus talked about fasting, giving, and praying. These are three of the like primary spiritual practices of like ancient Jewish culture. It's like while you're practicing your primary spiritual disciplines, don't let sin overtake your heart. I'm like, man, if I can like get this wrong and sin while I'm praying, fasting, and giving to the needy, it's like I'm just like, man, like I'm a hopeless train wreck, which is true, and which is why the good news is that it's Jesus' righteousness that fills me and not me producing my own and behaving in a certain way, but actually leaning into his righteousness. And in all of these warnings, he says something like, if you do it this way, if you do this to be seen or recognized by others, you've received your reward in full. That word reward in the biblical language really means like your payment. So like your paycheck has come through. So you're owed something for all of your deeds. And the Bible uses this language elsewhere, you know, the wages of sin or death, but the gift of God is eternal life. We've heard that before. Really, the language is what you've done deserves some kind of remuneration or some kind of payment, some kind of, you're owed something. And if it's a sinful life, you're owed death. And if it's a life cloaked in the forgiveness of Jesus, then it's this eternal life. And your righteousness, your good deeds, Jesus would say, deserves, it will have an effect. And the real thing is that you can trust Jesus that one day he's going to reward you, and doing it with right intentions just for him and out of his righteousness, you'll be deeply fulfilled and rewarded. Or Jesus says, or if you want, you can go get that paycheck over there. It's kind of like your boss saying, hey, you know what? I'm willing to, like, at the end of the month, pay you millions of dollars for your work. And you're like, sweet, in Vancouver, that's like 2 months rent. Or else, if you want, you can, like, go down to the corner and they'll give you a check for, like, $500 for the week. $500, or just wait a month or two and I'll give you millions. And this is really what Jesus is saying. He says, you've received your reward in full. In my touring days in our band, we had this thing that we would do. Whenever someone would do something good, we would, any example. So say Claire, we see her secretly, quietly. I notice she puts some money in the offering plate, or she does something nice for someone, or she helps someone out, or she gives up her chair for someone, or whatever. She does something nice. We would do this thing. We would see someone do that where we would, this sounds really terrible, but it was a joke, but we would be like, oh, Claire, you just gave money to everybody. Claire just gave money to the church. Let's hear it for Claire. And us in the band, we would start clapping and cheering. And then we would say, swipe. Because the idea, and it was just pure joke and sarcasm, but that we swipe their heavenly treasures and they've now received their reward in full. And awkward if there's no money in there. So it was a good example. But it was this joke that we were always like, kind of recognizing people for their good deeds. Obviously, that's not like how the text is working or whatever. But we would do this thing and be in the bus. And be like, oh, he just did this thing. This person just did this thing. And we would like clap and be like, swipe, your heavenly treasures are gone. And so me and my bandmates have no heavenly treasures waiting for us when we meet Jesus. But Jesus is saying that you can. If you choose the right motives when you do things. So Jesus says, be careful. This language you find throughout the Bible, be careful. Watch your step. Watch the way that you walk. Watch your life closely. Examine your life closely. I spoke from Ephesians 5 where Paul says, be very careful how you live. Another way of thinking about that is like intentional and thoughtful. Are you thinking through your life about, what are the choices and what is the path that I'm making? Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Sometimes I just wish we would like act out like the biblical texts, like some of the weird, messy ones, and like have a Sunday where someone stands here with a trumpet anytime someone like brings up a donation and we're just like, and just think about how ridiculous it is. This obviously doesn't happen in our world. I've been thinking about how does this happen? Because I think this must happen. I think Jesus is talking to a heart state that like transcends time and culture and technology and all that. So there are a few examples I've thought of. Maybe the picture first. I was at the, and someone just said something like this. I was at the Winnipeg Children's Museum. It's awesome, by the way, if you ever are in Manitoba. Sorry, you're in Manitoba. But the Winnipeg Children's Museum is great. And there's this wall. And now, fortunately, you can't even read the names from there. Not that you would know who they are, but probably lots of like Teasons and Weebs and stuff because it's Mennonite country. But they have this wall and you can donate. And it's probably hard to read this, so I'll kind of point it out. But if you donate red, if you donate between $50 to $99 or whatever, you get a red square. So look at all those red people. They're not very generous. Blue, $100 to $249. Not bad. And remember, this is Winnipeg, so they don't have as much money as us. So, just $250 to $499. It's getting pretty good. They had some green squares. Look at that. Rare group. And then orange kind of blurs in with it. But they're all the way up to, I don't know, I think it says like $799 or some, no, $749. And then $750 to $1,000. Wow, purple. A couple purple squares and stuff like that. And you get your name on that. Now, I don't want to cast shade because there could be that someone just donated. They didn't even know their name was going on there. Maybe they didn't want it to go on there or whatever. I can't measure someone's intentions or why they would do that. But to me, this is a really interesting picture of kind of how giving happens in our world, right? Like we see celebrities go on like game shows, or maybe you don't watch this, but they go on a game show and they're always like playing for a charity of their choice and stuff like that. And it's like, well, like big deal. Like you're just like, you're playing Family Feud. It seems actually really fun. I'd love to do that and it'd be really sweet. But it's cool. It's fine or whatever. But like we have this interesting view of giving where, like, you almost have to be noticed or, like, given a certain square, and you can, like, Sam said, mention the hospital and stuff like this. Now, it's tough because you want to be black and white and, like, say we can measure someone's intention, because someone maybe could do this in a very altruistic way and have their name on the museum wall and they just love the museum and whatever, and that's fine. But it is an interesting picture of what happens. Here's maybe one that's a little bit more relevant. I've got a few videos. I don't know if we'll watch them all. Charmaine wants us to, but we'll see, because it might take up too much time. But here's a YouTube short that you can check out, and you've probably seen something similar to this before.
How are you? What can I do for you? Can I get you anything to help you out? I can buy you anything you want.
Good, that's helpful.
What do you think you could use other than food? Anything?
Matthew, no problem. Need another sleeping bag?
Yeah.
I can run to Walmart and get you anything you want.
Give me a canvas.
That looks pretty killer, huh?
Yeah. Do
you need a new jacket or anything else?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe a pair of pants. Thank you very much.
Canvas.
Thank you.
There's a jacket. Yeah. There's a bunch of jeans here. This is a nice sleeping bag. And then here's a canvas like you asked for. Sweaters? And thermals. Man, you ate it all. You were hungry. Do you want anything else?
Okay.
I got one more thing for you, man.
Yeah.
A hug or a handshake. It's up to you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Can I get 1,000 cheeseburgers?
1,000 cheeseburgers?
Yeah.
Can I get 1,000 cheeseburgers?
1,000, just plain. Is that possible?
Yes, ma'am. You want 1,000 cheeseburgers.
So you said 1,000?
1,000, yeah.
Cheeseburgers?
Yes.
For yourself?
I'm trying to just feed the homeless in my city.
Oh, wow, that's a pretty cost. Like 4,800 plus tax to receive.
All right, thank you.
It's like delivery.
Yeah, it might be easier. Here you go, man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
What makes you happy in life?
It's abuse as a kid, so I had severe anger. I got like 6 hours a day. As I was beaten as a kid, so.
Sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah. I don't know what else to do. So I was able to work out for 6 hours like a maniac. Or,
yeah.
Calm me down and make me mellow and happy.
All right.
I saw your sign driving by.
Charmaine wins.
How are you doing? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're amazing. What's your name? So how long have you guys been living in the car?
Oh, my goodness. A long time. They've got to have it's a 99 Chevy Suburban. It's old, but
right.
Big enough for us to live in.
Oh, my gosh. I just want to bless you this. Here's $1,000 for you.
Don't.
Yeah.
Do you know, I was just thinking that. I said, somebody's going to give me $1,000.
No way. Yeah, this is for you. You're amazing. No, I promise. This is for you, and I wanna help you get off the street fully.
I want a tiny house.
Oh my gosh.
I want a tiny house, and I want land to put it on. I don't want my children to ever be homeless again.
Yeah.
I don't want them to ever have to go through this again.
Oh, you're so cute.
Thank you for treating me like I'm human.
Oh yeah, you're amazing.
Yeah. I think the most remarkable thing about those videos is that McDonald's was actually able to produce 1,000 cheeseburgers. And also that they didn't offer them a discount. You'd think you'd be like, oh, feeding the homeless, here's 5% offer. Anyways, you know, not to throw shade at McDonald's, but they actually came up with 1,000 burgers. If anybody could do it, I guess it's McDonald's. But I don't know. I watch some of those videos sometimes, and sometimes I feel like motivated and touched, and like in some ways it's almost like kind of what you just talk about, like letting your light shine before people. I don't know the creators of this content, but several of these videos have like 20 or 30 million views, right? And maybe in some ways it's this conflicting tension, because maybe in some ways it's inspiring some people, but also person who gives out, you know, buys, you know, a few hundred dollars at Walmart and a meal and stuff like that probably makes thousands of dollars off of this and a blossoming YouTube channel and all that. I don't know these people specifically. And the point is, I can never measure the intentions of people's hearts, and none of us ever can. How conflicting are our natures? I think typically we're pretty categorical and black and white about this, right? Like, oh, my intentions were good. Their intentions are bad. Their intentions are good. Are my intentions ever, like, all bad? Are my intentions ever all good? I'm not quite sure they are. So here's, like, a really real example. I get up on stage to preach, and my real desire is that people engage with the text and maybe decide they want to lean into Jesus a little bit more, and they want to read the Bible, and they want to get inspired and know God, and that, you know, whatever, you guys can forget about me one day, but that you have this blossoming relationship with Jesus, and that the act of teaching from Scripture is part of that. That's truly my intention. Is there some part of me that hopes that you guys like me? For sure. Is there some part of me that, like, struggles with insecurities, especially as an Enneagram 3, that does think about, what did people think about that? Oh, that joke didn't go that well. As though my joke going well, is that relevant in the kingdom of heaven? There is part of me that thinks, you know, what? How do people at Pilgrim perceive me? Do they like me? And then it kind of goes back into a conflicting thing. It's like, well, if they hate me and they're bored to tears by me, then the preaching might not, like, help them that much. And there's this really conflicting thing where I often realize perhaps my intentions, when good, are 80 or 90% good, with a little bit of that, like, that lean to be recognized by people. Many of us, when we give in secret, I think, probably most of us, if someone found out and was like, man, that's amazing. If they're inspired by that, that's great, but oh, that's amazing, that would feel good. And we like that gratification. We like that instant gratification. Me too. On the other hand, we can be pretty judgmental and categorical. Oh, that person's intentions were awful. They're terrible. We're pretty good at knowing when other people's intentions are bad and our intentions were actually really good. Where those are kind of the two ways we can really view that their intention. My guess is people have been in conflict with, their intentions might be muddled, or they might be kind of conflicting. And I think this is kind of the point of this series. We called it Lean In, and then subtitled The Preacher on the Mount. There's this picture of Jesus who's perfectly righteous and good, and recognizing that all of us struggling with that distant stain of, like, a sinful nature, even as we experience the forgiveness and grace of God, all of us struggle with those conflicted natures of, like, oh, my intentions were really mostly good, but still there's that bit of insecurity or that desire for human kind of validation or instant gratification or whatever that I'm struggling with. And the idea of Lean In isn't, okay, well, now your intentions are 100% good. They went from 0% good to, like, they're 100% bad, now they're 100% good. I think the idea is, if you feel like your intentions when you're being generous and practicing righteousness are maybe often at, like, 80% on average, maybe they're 60 sometimes, maybe 90, maybe sometimes lower, whatever, what would it look like to trust Jesus enough to say, hey, instead of 80, could I be at, like, 82%? This really is a play of, like, how much we trust God. I talked about this, if you're here, when Jesus is talking about, blessed are those who are persecuted. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Do you trust Jesus enough that he is going to reward you richly enough that any hardship you face in this life is worth it? In the same way, do you trust Jesus enough that if no one ever knows that you're good, maybe people all think you're just terrible and that you're bad. It's probably not going to happen, but maybe everyone thinks that. Do you trust Jesus enough that if you're practicing your righteousness, that your heavenly Father will see what's done in secret and will reward you? And I think that's the component of trust there. It's just recognizing that our natures are often conflicted. Our intentions are often muddled. And I think the prayer would be, God, could you help me just lean in a little bit more, to trust you just a little bit more? On the same token, Jessica pointed this out. Maybe you've heard those stories, like, maybe you've heard this about Rick Warren. Rick Warren, he wrote The Purpose-Driven Life. It's like, you know, people probably, U.S. have read it more than the Bible. I don't know. But it did really well. And I'm going to guess made a lot of money. So Rick Warren, actually, tithing is often used in the church to mean giving. It doesn't actually mean giving. It means tenthing. It's 10%. It really is just 10%. So if you don't give 10% of your income, just say, I give. And whatever you give, you give. But it really literally means 10%. And some people have different views on that, and that's fine. I'm not interested in that. But what Rick Warren did is, things started going well, is that they grew until the point where they do what's called reverse tithing, where they give 90% of their income and they keep 10% of their income. That's a really inspiring thing. I've never met Rick Warren. From what I hear from people who know him, seems like a great guy. So the thing is that that's a really inspiring story that's impacted my journey of giving and my journey of being generous. But I wouldn't be inspired by that if I didn't know about it, right? Some of these stories need to be shared. And so I think there's that, like, as I'm processing this, I'm like, God, how much do I trust you that you're going to reward me eternally, even if I'm never recognized? But then how do I often trust you to guard my heart so that people can see my righteousness, my good deeds, in a way that my light shines before people so that they will see my Father in heaven and glorify him so that they can also trust God and have a great heavenly reward. So when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received the reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. That's kind of impossible in ancient Jewish culture. Right hand was like, most people were right-handed, so that's known as like kind of your doing, your deeds flowed out of your right hand. It's just a language to say that. So it's saying what you do, even your left hand, which would be seen as kind of the useless, more useless appendage or whatever, it's like as much as you can be content and satisfied with that. So that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Do you guys know that story? We often call him the rich young ruler in Matthew 19. The Bible never says the words rich young ruler. It's this young dude who's got a lot of money or whatever. And Jesus says to him, he says, if you want to be perfect, which is a pretty big invitation, if you want to be perfect, he says, sell everything. Just give it away to the poor. Just give it all away. That text and this text similarly, I don't think are necessarily about like money, but they're more about the intentions and the heart. And the rich young ruler, he says, forget that, I'm out. My guess, I don't know how this would play out. I can't wait to like unpack some stories with Jesus one day. But my guess is that if that guy said, all right, I'm in, and he sold everything and gave it away, what would happen is that his heart would shift from its motivation to trusting earthly things to trusting his heavenly Father, so much that it would be so transformational that one day he could be rich again and manage his money in a way that honors Jesus. I don't think the issue was this guy's never allowed to have money. I think it was we need to set his heart right so then if he has money, he'll use it well. In the same way, I think this text is saying the same thing. Could you be just as generous if no one knew? Could you be just as generous? Could you be just as righteous? Could you do just as many good things? Would this YouTuber be willing to go give 1,000 cheeseburgers out to me? I wish I was on the street that day, by the way. But would this YouTuber be willing to do that if no one watched their channel? Probably wouldn't be able to fund it because monetizing it. But like, would he be willing to spend all that time doing all of that if he only got 10 views per video? I don't know him. Probably most people. No. I think that's the question Jesus is asking. Are you willing to be extremely righteous, living out the character and the righteousness and the holiness of God, even if no one ever gives you a high five for it? If so, your heart's in the right place. And from there, let's let your light shine before others. Over the next few weeks, we're going to get to unpack this and kind of how it interacts with prayer and then fasting, which fasting is like a funny topic nowadays because we eat so much in North America. We're not doing that on a potluck Sunday, don't worry. We should actually maybe do it on a potluck Sunday and then no one's allowed to eat, but we'll just stare at them. Anyways. I think this is one of the things I'm amazed by. We're going to turn to a time of communion here. I think one of the things I'm amazed by here is just that Jesus would take